I wanted to start by setting the tone of reading a hafiz, one of my favorite hafiz poems. And it's called, I Have Learned So Much. I have learned so much from God that I can no longer call myself a Christian, a Hindu, a Muslim, a Buddhist, a Jew. The truth has shared so much of itself with me that I can no longer call myself a man, a woman, an angel, or even pure soul. Love has befriended Hafiz so completely, it has turned to ash and freed me of every concept and image my mind has ever known. What a lofty state. What a lofty state. Oh, to be in such a state. And that enters the subject today. And the reason I suggested the subject a couple months ago was because I have been introduced maybe 6 months ago to this book, Love Without Conditions. And you might have it on your shelf because Paul Farini wrote it in the 90s, Love Without Conditions. And he speaks about taking an equal hand with Christ to be helped to walk and open his own door to the kingdom within, because the door has always been open. And it's like that old Rumi saying, I was knocking for the answer, I was knocking for help, but I realized I was knocking from the inside. You know, so he is very much into the divine beloved and seeker in this relationship with Jesus. And I love what he says here, because suffering, he says, human suffering is caused from the belief in separation. The belief in separation. Let us be clear that Jesus has no exclusive place or position in the Christ mind. Krishna, Buddha, Moses, Rumi, Lao Tzu, or many others are consciously joined with him there. And perhaps I should accurately say here, if you feel more comfortable addressing yourself to Buddha, Krishna, please do so. Jesus would never be offended. Indeed, he will be pleased because you are following his teaching of non-separation. Separation based on the notion that we look different, race. So to better demonstrate this, I make my little diagrams, and I unfortunately got bent in the car. But the rational mind, this is pretty simple, but the rational mind, governed by the ego, divide, conquer, puts things into categories, judgment, race, you are what you do, status, prestige, education, fame, wealth, and the focus is really on the past or the future half the time. It operates out of fear. Now, in comparison to this, we have unity consciousness, with which all of us have and have glimpses of and are awake to and practice from our heart. However, the thing is that the world operates mostly from ego. And we long and naturally long to be more in spirit unity. It doesn't, consciousness, it doesn't matter if you call it Brahman, Holy Spirit, God center source. We are all a spark in the flame of the mind of God, and that is true. So Farini talks about, number one, suffering is caused by the belief in separation. And number two, underneath the separation and causality of that belief is generally fear. Fear due to feelings of worthlessness, shame, and guilt. We have been conditioned with conditional love. We have been conditioned with, we're going to get punished if we don't conform. We have been conditioned through religions with fear. If you don't believe in a certain way, you'll be punished or you won't be saved, and that kind of thing. The whole, the whole system we have is based on, if you don't adhere to rules, you will be punished. There's not a real, if you think about it, there's not a belief that's in place, in action in our society that really believes that people can change and grow. But they can. This consciousness, which seeks connection, which knows that we are all of this divine mind, without a doubt. And you all know that. This is not new to you. But loves the self. At least we're learning and trying to. Forgives the self. Projects love and forgiveness onto the world. This consciousness, Farini claims, and I believe that's true, it's innate. It's innate for me to want to know my source. But the thing is, there is no such thing as separation. There's no such thing as coercion into one way. Because there's nothing separate from God, even in this atom right in front of my nose. There's no separation. It's all part of our illusion. However, I believe we come here in the duality of Earth to resolve this conflict within us. Because the rational mind, you know, Aristotle, way back, he started a lot of our discourse based on the rational mind. Division, conquer, has been the history of humankind. But when somebody gets tired of suffering from these perspectives, then a light comes on and the journey begins, I say. But the beautiful thing about Farini's book, and I love it, is it's just a good, beautiful reminder that there is no such thing as judgment. There's no such thing in divine mind of condemnation or right or wrong. Right or wrong are categories that we learn. It doesn't mean there's not a more healthy, loving choice. And that's what this mind, if this mind governs that mind, then you have a balance. You have a balance because then decisions, resolutions, and problems, self-examination are done from an acceptance level of love, forgiveness. And so unconditional love is something most of us had to learn by deprogramming a lot of this. Mm-hmm. Our parents gave us conditional love, and some of this unconditional love, of course. Most of us had that. But still, the expectations were there to conform, to act a certain way, and that it pretty much like society, it's conditional. It's conditional. So to transcend that, we come free within when we start to love and forgive ourselves. It has to start with self. I can't do it for him, he can't do it for me, I can't do it for another person. So Farini's book is, I would recommend it, you can get it used on Amazon, but it just is a divine reminder chapter after chapter, especially when we're looking at the guilt and shame that we carry in residue. We still hold guilt on a cellular level for something that might have happened 50 years ago. Shame, guilt. But he says in order to even move to this state of consciousness, we have to clean up the weeds. We have to become conscious. Yes, I think I still carry some of that. You know, be aware of it. And in order to release it, not to resist it, never to resist, but to walk through and give love to the wound. That's what we have to do. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful book and about coming to the God within. Coming to the God within. And he talks about how we have to really shed these notions of conditional love and punishment, self-blame, in order to really free ourselves into opening the door to our own divinity, much less someone else's. So if I'm going to love my neighbor as myself, I need to really become conscious of my habits and my patterns of how I interact in the world of forms and with other people. Because most of us, and I do too, I have residue from my past. I have from my wounds, you know, and I'm working on it. It's a working progress. But I love this book because he brings such love to the process, which bringing love to anything, whether it's self-doubt or anything, it takes away the power of the negative or the pain. So I really honor his perspective that in order to alleviate our own suffering, we have to become very much compassionate parents with ourselves and give ourselves the unconditional love that our biological parents maybe could not give us. And that's okay too. Because eventually, if we can forgive and wipe clean and become whole and operate from more of a unity consciousness governing the other, I mean, the intellect is a wonderful tool, but like Emerson said, it should be like little hands and feet to serve the higher consciousness. So most of us, I believe, have both of these at working in our consciousness. And yes, you're very conscious individuals. You're all probably in a state of healing yourselves from things you have experienced in order to be free. But making a choice to not suffer by inner work is the beginning. And opening the door, accepting that everyone is good innately. Everyone is good. I believe it's a fair universe, like Einstein said, but everything operates from goodness. I believe that and know that. I believe that more than anything. So that means that when I get into a discussion at work and they're putting down Trump, for instance, and focusing on all the negative qualities, that doesn't feel right either. And I've done that. I've done that. But see, he's getting so much power because everybody's talking about him, and that's why he has power. That's an old metaphysical law about energy. But in this consciousness, it can look at the world and even undesired behavior of leaders, or apparently so-called leaders, and say, well, now what can I learn from the feelings that are arising in me? What can I learn from my anger when I think about Trump? Can I see a larger view, like unity consciousness? Remember, trust that everything operates out of good, that the universe is in a state of evolution, and that humankind has the ability to evolve into their natural state. So this has to operate and control the other aspects of my being. That doesn't mean you're not going to take action. That doesn't mean you're not going to get angry, you know? But it's the more we're aware of when these things come up and become self-healer with the God within, taking that hand like Ferrelli, Italian, did with along equal at with Christ, taking the hand with the avatar, not and getting up off the knees, because the worthiness has been healed, not in the ego mind, conceited way, but in a way that I am worthy. I have healed enough, I have loved enough, like Hafiz says, that I can no longer call myself in a box. Because a lot of us outgrow boxes. But the only way out of the current state, and I think we're all being challenged, especially in this country right now, with this heaviness, this poses to us, what can I learn from this situation and how can I be the best steward and the most loving in it? It forces us to examine the self, especially with this racism, for instance, that's been under the rug. It never really was dealt with. So look at what Donald Trump might be doing in the emerging of the shadow of ourselves. To examine. Not saying he's conscious of that, of course. Yeah, I'm not saying that. But still, remember, at the base of, at the core of every individual, every soul is good. So I can't judge that. Unity consciousness knows that truth applies to all. It applies to me, it applies to you. It doesn't matter what you've done. And I can't judge that. And unity consciousness lives from the big picture. We appear to have bodies, but that doesn't mean that's who we really are either. What is the real nature of my reality? Is it formless? Is it Most people think they are the body. Doesn't mean we don't treat it like it's real. But unity consciousness is not, doesn't have to define God or define the sacred mystery of life. It accepts it in all its gift to us, because even coming to this planet is a gift in all its superficial diversity and duality. It's a gift to come home. It's a gift to heal the false notions that we've been bombarded with for eons. I'm not separate from you. I'm not separate from the ant. The ant is God too. It's just the different degrees of consciousness. Everything. So it's such an amazing journey. So getting to the unity consciousness, I was going to say, the only way I feel comfortable in looking at the situation of today, which seems to be so filled with suffering and angst and anxiety and pain, is to know that there is a higher order going on at all times. And I don't have to define that. I have to trust that. But believing in the ultimate good of the universe first. And the only way I can feel that I'm balanced today is by forgiving the world, forgiving the illusion, forgiving the dream, and seeing it as a gift to come out of my own slumber into who I really am and love myself and others unconditionally in a conditioned world, and not to expect happiness or from a conditioned world, not to expect unconditional love from a conditioned world. When most people are very much asleep. So, with that, I just want to say that my mantra is, in the morning, I love, I'm awake, and I let go. That's all. Because if the mind, I can get all overwhelming. You know, what's Trump saying and this and that and this and that, and focus on the past. And, you know, the rational mind, if it's the governing aspect of somebody's being, they seek security in the external world. And remember, a lot of us learn that we get love depending on how we get responded to by our parents or others. So the more I can please them, the more I can feel loved. That's a lot of the codependencies that we learned as children. The more rewards, the better my behavior, the more rewards I receive. Well, that has nothing to do with the inner relationship with God, with me, that we're trying to remember, unify, and love. Love. So, I wanted to read, in closing my part of this, I wanted to read Paul Farini's beginning benediction, which I think is very beautiful. Does anybody have any questions on this?
And by the way, we started early, so you guys keep going till 10 till.
I can't see what time it is.
It's a half hour.
Oh, okay. But last thing I'll say is, resolution within, in a time that appears to be very much conflictual in our society, in our world, forgiveness to me is the only antidote for that. I forgive myself for getting angry at times. I forgive the world. And to me, it is part of the dream, but it's a very important one for us to walk through. So forgiveness, he emphasizes tremendously on the journey to the higher self within. Benediction. There is only one Son of God, and you are He. From Him you receive, to Him you give. When you look at yourself, may you remember. When you look at your brother, may you also remember. When you look away in fear, remember only this: subject and object, lover and beloved, are not two, but one and the same. When you give, or what you give and what you receive are reflections of each other. We are all walking each other home. Thank you.
Can you plant this pussies out for me?
Oh, sure.
Thank you. All of them. My wife is going to pass something out to you. And if you don't mind, I'd like to stand because I can breathe better. Thank you. I believe that God made us all parents so that we might experience unconditional love from ourselves. I think that's my first experience with unconditional love, having children. But I recognize that while that was my first conscious experience with unconditional love, it was not my first experience with unconditional love. My first conscious experience of unconditional love was when my first child was born, and each one after that. But then I came to realize later on that my very first experience with unconditional love was understanding that God, who is the expression of unconditional love, made me in his image, made us in his image after his likeness, unconditional love. And I believe that his love went even further than that, and that he trusted me, trust us, and knowing that we would be conditioned otherwise, to give us complete autonomy over ourselves. And that the scripture says, God made us in his image after his likeness and gave us dominion over the fish of the sea, which is our emotions, gave us dominion over the fowls of the air, which is our thoughts, gave us dominion over the beasts of the field, which is our most dominant characteristics, that which distinguishes you from me. We, each of us, being the only one of ourselves that there is. And moreover, that God gave us dominion over those creeping things, you know, those ideologies, those things that grab our attention that we cannot identify, that later on we place some label to because this is what it means to us. That's unconditional love, that I'm going to make you in my image after my likeness, and I'm going to allow you to do exactly what you wanted to do, anything you want to do, however you want to do it, when you want to do it, with whomever you want to do it, and you can do it unapologetically. That's unconditional love to me. I've experienced that, only to fall flat on my face and awaken to God's unconditional love. And that which you've been handed this morning is of someone whom I have, since 2003, come to embrace as being the practical side in terms of how we each might exercise ourselves in unconditional love, notwithstanding our conditioning. And I got to tell you, being one that was conditioned to hate beyond measure, that love works. It really does. I guarantee you it works. It conquers everything. It really does conquer everything. You know, Ralph Waldo Emerson said that he who would be a man or a woman, conversely, must be a nonconformist, for God will not have his works manifest by cowards. Which means that despite our conditioning, I'm going to be in this. I don't have to impress. I don't have to get approval. I don't have to be sanctioned by anyone. I'm just going to be who I am. And who I am today, thank God, is the epitome of love. I remember when, after my wife and I got married, my baby sister, who is the youngest, was asked, "What is Bubba's wife like?" My nickname is Bubba. And she said, "Child, all I can tell you is that she's love. She's love." And of course, I can testify to that, of course, that she is love. And so this love of God that I had come to contemplate, that I had come to know, that I had begun to exercise until I met my wife was a very painful experience because I was exercising it on persons whom I expected the same thing from. But of course, all of that helped me to recognize that I'm going to be judged on what I do, not what others do to me, but on the basis of my activity. And I'm going to reap what I sow. So I came to realize that despite how people were behaving to me, or behaving toward me, I was reaping what I had sown, and they were reaping what they had sown. So love became a very practical thing, having to work at it. Since I was here last, because my wife talked about prejudice, and quite frankly, I'm comfortable with Trump. I'm comfortable because it brings out all the things that I experienced as a child. And I can better deal with it because it's not camouflaged. You know, and so quite frankly, I like it. And I'm confronted with it all the time, and I face it straight up. Except there was one instance where I became really angry. And then during the week, as the week passed, I said to my wife, I said, you know, that person is in pain too. That person is feeling really bad also. So I began to pray for that person, and I felt a whole lot better for that. And because I know that there's no distance in prayer, I know that wherever that person was, he was feeling my love. Because there is no distance in prayer. You know, wherever you are, 1,000 miles away as it might be, if my thoughts rest upon you, I know that we are going to establish thereby a vibratory affinity where we become one with each other. And then also I know that the power of that love and that thought is such that no matter what you're going through at that moment, it's going to change your disposition, even if it's just for a moment, depending on how stern or how fixed you are in anything that is contrary to it. Because it's impossible to feel the essence or the vibration of love despite where you are. I know that because I've experienced it. Now, Ralph Waldo Emerson said also, and this is really why I'm emphasizing it, that I know, is because I believe what he also said, that to believe what is right in your heart for yourself is right for all others is genius. And I like the idea of being a genius. You know, I do. I like the idea of being a genius and being the only one there is, because I'm the only genius like me. You know? And you're the only genius like you. So here we are in the company of geniuses, all believing and being convinced of the things that we've been convinced of, only to come through our experiences as Adam in his original state. See, Adam's original disposition, because we often think about Adam as being a fallen man. And as a result thereof, in the 5th chapter of Genesis, it talks about Adam making sons and daughters after his own image. And if we follow the allegory up to the 5th chapter, what we'll find that in the 3rd chapter, in the 1st and 2nd chapter, the consciousness of God thought of Adam, and the 2nd chapter, the manifestation of the God-man presented itself in the world, in the garden. And by the time we get to the 3rd chapter, this divine man had fallen because he began to think of duality. So here we are in this conditioned state. But if we thought of Adam in his original state and our words ensnaring us, as my wife was talking about and presenting the dualistic sides of love, the conditioned and the unconditional, we find that our words oftentimes define who we are and what we're thinking. But if we were to bring our thoughts back to that original disposition, what we will find is that Adam had complete, absolute, total, perfect knowledge of himself and God. And that's what we want. That's what we are to strive for. And I believe that all of us, if we all have not yet, that at some point in our evolutionary transitional experiences, are going to strive for that perfection. Because perfection defined means that you start something incompleted. It means that you count the costs of what you're getting involved with and see it through to the end. So therefore, perfection is now, which means you can start and you can finish. So we shouldn't think in terms of Jesus being the only one who's perfect. What we find is that Jesus began a journey in terms of demonstrating his relationship to God and God's relationship to us, and he completed that. And so in that completion, he exercised and demonstrated perfection, because we are called upon to be perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect. So when we think of God as a spirit, and without that spirit, there is no life, then we find that apart from our bodies, the spirit is what exercises itself to give it life. But when we separate the spirit from the body, it is no longer life. So we are not our bodies, in effect. We're the spirit that lives in these bodies. And so, coming back to that original state, that original disposition where Adam was, where he knew God and he knew himself. And moreover, by God being a spirit, and that spirit compelling us to love our neighbor as ourselves, then we are able to transcend these conditions to which we have been exposed all of our lives. And so that's the sheet that you have in your hands, whereby we are able to demonstrate this love. And I know that you have done it. I know that you are doing it. And so therefore, I recognize I'm not telling you anything that you do not know. We're just reminding ourselves and giving ourselves an opportunity, while being reminded, to think if there is anyone at any time, at any point in all the years that we have lived, that we've offended, we can correct it in consciousness now. And moreover, as we continue throughout our daily experiences, we will find situations, as my wife and I acknowledged this morning, those things that we are exposed to, or those things to which we are striving for, we are exercised in them. Opportunity arises whereby, in other words, we have to walk our talk. And so that's all this is about, us being reminded how to love God in relationship to ourselves. Because as the scripture says, I remind you that we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. The scripture also says that we are to love God with all our heart, with all our mind, with all our strength. Now think about it this way. If we are made in the image after the likeness of God, are we not thereby loving ourselves? And if we are to give this love to our fellow man, are we not also setting ourselves up to receive this love again? So it's a circle. So here we are in absolute total control of our own lives, having been given dominion over it, deciding that we're going to exercise ourselves in conditional love, because as we look upon our fellow man, we are in fact looking upon ourselves. So the first of how to love God. To love God in the most practical way is to love our fellow beings. Think about that. To love God in the most practical way. That means what you're doing now, what you're thinking now. So as there is no distance in prayer or thought, anyone, any distance away from you can, in this moment, receive the essence of love. Is that understood? Of course it is. Again, to love God in the most practical way is to love our fellow being. If we feel for others in the same way as we feel for our own dear ones, we love God. As I started out, I experienced unconditional love when my first child was born. But it wasn't my first experience with conditional love. I became conscious of God's unconditional love years after I had many children. Continuing, if instead of seeing faults in others, we look within ourselves, we are loving God. That's something to think about, isn't it? I think that it is for me, because when I began to remove the fault from others that I was accusing them of and realized that I was giving birth to these things myself, they were just participating in what I had created. That was a profound transformation for me and a profound challenge. Again, if instead of robbing others to help ourselves, we rob ourselves to help others, we are loving God. And incidentally, this brings up a thought. In Islam, I learned that each one of us, in the existential, experiential encounters of life, all have an excellent attribute of God. So there is no one alive that does not have perfect attributes of God. And all of our experiences are predicated upon that one foundational perfection that we have, in that it gives us opportunity in our interacting with others to use that one seed of perfection to bring us to a higher level of maturity and manifestation, or manifesting God's perfect love. The next one. If we suffer in the sufferings of others and feel happy in the happiness of others, we are loving God. The next, if instead of worrying over our own misfortunes, we think ourselves more fortunate than many others, we are loving God. What I have learned as a result of this one is to see all things that we might call a problem as an improvement opportunity. So what we take these apparent misfortunes and we take dominion over it and we turn it into a blessing. So that's why they come. They come to challenge us. They come to give birth. It comes to prove that he that lives within us, that power that lives within us, is greater than any power that's in the world or outside of us. You know, because we have the power to decide, to determine, to even influence, if no one else, ourselves. You know? Continuing. If we endure our lot with patience and contentment, Apostle Paul says, in whatever state you're in, therein be content. Man, that's a powerful growth statement. In whatever state you find yourself, therein be content. So here's Meher Baba saying, if we endure our lot with patience and contentment, accepting it as his will, we are loving God. Yeah, it is hard. But you know how it is. When you've done all that you can do and you can't do anymore, the Apostle Paul admonishes us, still do. It's like, stand. After you've done all to stand, stand. Hold your position. Don't let anyone take your permission, your position, and no one has a right to it except by your permission. Yes. I just got two more statements.
I think that is just amazing, that accepting our lot with patience and contentment. I think that we wouldn't be in a situation, everything happens as it's supposed to. So maybe until we learn the lesson or receive the gift, then circumstances may disappear. But I think it's perfect timing.
Mm.
Beyond what I might know.
Absolutely. Two more statements, and I want all of us to participate in this, because I know that I didn't come to teach, I come to learn, you know, and I come to grow, to embrace, and prayerfully you are as well. He says, if we understand and feel that the greatest act of devotion and worship to God is not to hurt or harm any of his beings, we are loving God. The last statement, and we're open for discussion on these as time permits. To love God as he ought to be loved, we must live for God and die for God, knowing that the goal of life is to love God and find him as our own self. Isn't that amazing? Thank you so very much. Let us open this for discussion. As my wife has made a comment, I'm sure others of you might have a comment or a statement you want to interject, so please feel free to do so. Thank you very much.
I was going to make an announcement, but this it fits what we're talking about.
Yes.
That in whatever situation you're in, find yourself content. Because ultimately, whatever situation I am in is the manifestation of God.
Yeah.
That's
right. That's right.
I find myself in situations sometimes which really test that. And within 1 week, this week, I dropped my phone in water and it died. And that's a real horrific experience. As you all know, you lose all your contacts and everything. So I got that reset up. As soon as I got it set up, my computer blew up. Friday night, and the only way to fix it was to reset it back to its original state, which meant that I lost everything, including all my email contacts, all the SLC group contacts. Everything was lost. So I spent 24 hours panicking and putting it all back together. And I was talking to Alexander and Vishka. By the way, I want you to know they come 2 hours to get here, at least. That experience is the divine. It's holy. It's sacred. And if I can walk in that, it's a whole lot easier today because it's all fixed.
Oh, yeah.
You know? The idea is to be able to walk in it at the moment, in the midst of it.
That's right.
And say, this is God.
That's right.
It is a reflection of me. It's a reflection of what I need. And embrace it as I would fall down on my knees before the presence of the divine.
That's right.
That's what he says in here too, Paul Farini. He says, it's possible to even resolve an accident, a rape, a murder, with applying the essence of love and acceptance. I mean, it's in the highest way, you know. Like that accident I might have gotten into, that too is perfect in the moment.
The announcement part of that real quick is if you don't get your email for the Sunday announcement by Wednesday, Tuesday night, please let me know. That meant I lost your, I didn't retrieve your particular email. Address.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I find that whenever I'm in a suffering situation or a judgment situation or a stressful situation, that it is pointing out to me where I have moved out of that oneness, out of that connection, and it's a place to recommit.
Mm.
to release, to let go of those old belief systems.
That's right.
And at least for me. The other thing I find that is sometimes a situation when I look and look and look and can't find any place where there's a belief system connected to it, it's simply an opportunity for me to strengthen that connection.
Yes, ma'am.
So, I'm still human and I still get stressed and I still get angry, but if I just take a deep breath and I can go, okay, you know, okay. Like this morning, I apologize for having my eyes shut, but right now I can't hear unless I shut my eyes. And I'm looking at that and saying, what is this? Is this a strengthening of the hearing? Because I've been asking for my healing, for a healing on my hearing, and the more you use it, the more it heals. But right now, it's a matter of clarity only when I have my eyes shut.
That's really interesting. I mean,
well, like, excuse me.
Something's going on because we're all getting the same kind of message. A week ago, lightning knocked out my telephone, my computer.
Why?
I had no internet and no telephone, no television for an entire week.
Well, I'll add to that.
And it was fine. I enjoyed being cut off.
My cell phone, I dropped my cell phone after we saw you. It cracked the screen just at the point where it took out the LED lighting so that I could not use it. I still don't have it back. It's been a week without a phone. Mm. And we got five projects going on. I can't email anybody. I can't talk to anybody. It's like, yeah, I'm kind of enjoying it, but it's weird.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, yeah.
We're getting practice, though, for some reason. What did they do? Good God, before they had, what were you saying? You know, before they had
internet?
All the conveniences. I mean, a lot of us grew up with all these conveniences. We never had a cell phone.
No.
I think that.
You don't like it. You put your entire life on a square piece of plastic with glass on it. I don't like it. I mean,
yeah.
But that's what we're forced. I mean, I guess it's a choice.
It's a choice, and it can be a real preoccupation.
Sure.
That Facebook thing.
Oh, yeah, but if you're working and you have contacts and you have to make phone calls and emails and back and forth, then
that's right.
I think that we're being exercised in